Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello, a writer and researcher at MLB.com, joined by Matt Myers, MLB.com national content editor. Today is Thursday, November 30th, and we are almost to the winter meetings. Like, we're so close to the winter meetings, and I just can't wait because not a whole lot has happened yet. Like, we're starting to see some movement, and I'm really hoping that next week we're going to see a lot. So we're going to talk a little bit about the pitching market, which has already started moving. We've seen some signings. We're going to focus on three pretty interesting teams that maybe it's not totally clear what direction they're going to take. And then we're going to talk a little bit about upcoming Hall of Fame vote, which you might not have realized is actually happening this weekend. Next weekend, I think is what I meant. Next weekend. But we're almost to that. Matt, have you realized this? 12 free agent deals of at least $10 million total have been signed, right? 11 of those are pitchers. And I don't really count the hitter because it's Charlie Blackmon and he just stayed with the Rockies in September. So if we're talking about like actual offseason, every single meaningful move has been a free agent pitcher signing. And I have a trivia question for you, which you might already know the answer to. If you don't count Jason Hayward, who took 9 years to stay with the Dodgers, what is the biggest free agent deal for a hitter moving to a new team so far?
Is it something silly like Joey Wendell or something?
It's sillier than that. It's Joey Wendell tied with Garrett Hampson, who... who seemed like kind of the same player in a lot of ways. Joey Wendell got a $2 million to go to the Mets, and Garrett Hampson got $2 million to go to the Royals. Needless to say, there hasn't been a whole lot going on in the position player market. We know it's thin. The pitching market's kind of interesting. Should we talk about there's a couple of teams. There's three teams who have already signed multiple pitchers, right? The Cardinals got Sonny Gray, Kyle Gibson, and Lance Lynn. The Reds have signed Nick Martinez, Emilio Pagan, and the Braves retained Joe Jimenez and Pierce Johnson, and then they also added Reynaldo Lopez. Now, we can also talk about Aaron Nola and Luis Severino, but I like the teams that have been aggressive in going out and saying, we know we need pitchers, we will sign all of the pitchers. And yet, if you look at the Cardinals, do you think they are done? Here's the thing. I don't think they're done. I like what they did. I feel like they still need another bat misser because they just haven't done that yet.
I agree with you. I think it would seem a little bit out of character for them to go out and then sign another, because like I don't know who else really fits. I mean, unless they're going out and getting Yamamoto, who's like the bat misser they're going to get who would feel like a significant upgrade?
They already signed three guys. For Tyler Glasnow or Dylan Cease, call it a day and move on. They have so many outfielders. That's trades for them.
That's not bad thinking, but like which of those outfielders do you think would have them in play for, say, Tyler Glasnow, for 1 year of Tyler Glasnow?
Well, no, it wouldn't be a specific like major leaguer for major leaguer trade. You know, you get your prospects thrown in and you take some of the salary off the hand of the, like, there's always ways to make these things work.
I guess, but I'm looking at their payroll right now, and right now their estimated luxury tax payroll per roster resource / Fangraphs is $208 million. And if they're making one of these trades that you're describing, they're probably adding, you know, $20 million of payroll. And it just doesn't seem like something the Cardinals would do. I've been wrong before. So like, I'll never say never, but I would be surprised if they went and added a lot of payroll. Now, maybe there is some like creative trade where it's like, hey, we'll trade you a, you know, pre-arb / bat / prospects for your pre-arb pitcher, but like those guys don't exist. Basically the one name that keeps coming up in that conversation is Logan Gilbert, and we'll talk about the Mariners later, but like it's hard to know who that player is.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it doesn't have to be Glasnow, right? It could be like Dylan Cease. We know the White Sox are motivated, right? They've already made a very interesting trade when they dealt Aaron Bummer for five different players, like none of whom I'm actually sure are that interesting, but turning a reliever into five players is kind of cool. You know which move I liked the most so far, I think, is actually the one that was a little under the radar. 2 years and $24 million for the Tigers and Kenta Maeda. And I liked that one a lot because a lot of these teams, you know, do they need an ace? Sure. But they just need innings. Like, they need good, competent innings. And I know he's older. I know he's 36 years old, right? But if you can pencil him in for like 120 solid average innings each of the next 2 years, I mean, you got to fill like 1,400. You know, it's all a math problem. How do you fill all those innings? And I know people want to start with the priority. You want to start with, well, we're going to get Blake Snell first, and then we'll figure out the rest later. Doesn't have to go in that order. You got to fill those innings. I liked that one a lot for the Tigers. I'm actually surprised the Twins weren't interested at that price.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Twins have sort of been on record as that they're trying to cut payroll. So to that extent, I'm not really that surprised. And I agree with you. I mean, the Tigers, were people calling them a sleeper coming into this year? Because I already feel like I'm predicting them, people calling them a sleeper going into
2 years ago. It was into 22, and then it was a disaster.
But this year, when healthy, Riley Green was very good. Spencer Torkelson kind of quietly hit 30-plus homers, which, like, it's hard for a guy who was the number one overall pick and considered disappointment to hit 30 homers and it kind of fly under the radar, but it kind of feels like it did. So there's some, like, interesting things going on there, and Maeda is a nice addition for them, especially for a team that was supposedly to have a lot of great young pitchers. None of them have really panned out. So that was a good addition for them.
Aaron Nola stays with the Phillies for 7 years and $172 million. And I sort of feel like we've reached the point in, like, baseball prospecting here where you're like, yeah, that's a lot of money, but it also makes a lot of sense. And I can't say, wow, what a wonderful steal, or, oh, I'm mad about that. Like, a lot of these are just, yeah, okay, that's as expected. I mean, until we get to Cody Bellinger, which I think would be the opposite of that. But, like, so far, yeah, we have an idea of what these things are going to be.
Yeah, and it does feel like, and I may be wrong about this, it feels like we've had more players, like, hit free agency and then re-sign with their current teams in recent years. It feels like this is a thing that's been happening more.
Brandon Nimmo,
guys will hit free agency and be like, you know what, I like where I am, and I'm gonna re-sign here. It used to feel like guys would hit free agency, it was like, okay, they're leaving, and we're seeing less of that. I thought Nola was going to be in really high demand, so the only thing that surprised me about it was maybe that he didn't get more money, because I thought maybe if there was a bidding war, he might actually do a little better, despite the fact that, like, he had a below average ERA last year, and it was a little bit of a disappointment in his quote-unquote walk year. But he was pretty good in the postseason, and I think his track record's pretty good, and people feel like he's, as far as these things go, he's pretty durable. So there was a feeling of, okay, this guy, I know a lot of fans of other teams who are like, oh, I want to sign Aaron Nola. So that's why I was kind of surprised he signed so quickly. But hey, you know what? Maybe he just likes pitching in Philly. The money's good. And he was like, I just want to get this done and enjoy my offseason. And no matter what, I am, like, set financially for life. So good for him.
As an absolutely snobbish New Yorker, I kind of do place some value in knowing that a guy has already succeeded in your tough Northeastern market. You know what I mean? Like, that gets overblown with the Yankees, but he's not some newcomer. Like, he's been very good with the Phillies. And if they didn't retain him, they were going to have to replace him, and that would have cost as much, you know, or more. And I think that's the thing people forget, right? Everybody's like, well, just go get Yamamoto. And, like, sure, go get Yamamoto. But he also has to choose to come to your town. Maybe he doesn't want to choose Philadelphia because there's, like, 17 other options available. Like, it takes two to make a deal, I think, is the point. Here's a question for you, Matt. Who is the next interesting starting pitcher to sign? I'm not counting Ohtani here, because, you know, he's a unicorn and he's barely even a pitcher. Like, he won't be a pitcher this upcoming season. Who is the next guy? I have an idea. I have an answer, but I want to know what you're thinking.
I would say Eduardo Rodriguez, partially because he signed very quickly. When he was a free agent a couple years ago, he signed really quickly. And to a certain extent, maybe I expect him to sign quickly again this time around. So that was, and I also feel like we're at the sweet spot now where guys are starting to go. And he's probably not someone who will necessarily be affected by Yamamoto or Snell. He's kind of in that next, like, the next tier. Even though, honestly, I think I might actually rather have the next 3 years of him than Blake Snell, which is an interesting question. So that would be my prediction, would be Eduardo Rodriguez.
I think that's a great one. Mine is similar, just kind of a step down from that. And that's Seth Lugo, who is sort of like, you know, the Nick Martinez of Emilio Pagans in some way. Like, he's useful. He's good. He's going to, like, get a multi-year deal as maybe a starter, maybe a swingman. The other name, I guess Michael Wacha is kind of like that too, right? The other name is someone we have not heard almost anything about, which is sort of surprising to me. Have you heard the slightest rumor about Marcus Stroman so far? Because I can't say I've heard his name pop up in, like, a month, and I'm not sure why that is.
That's a really good question. I think part of it is the fact that, like, one of the teams that you would think would almost certainly be hot on him would be the Mets, given their need for pitching. And there, I think, given the way that ended, he's not coming back. So there's, like, an obvious team that would have been, like, really in on him. But, like, I do like Stroman as a pitcher. You're right. There's been no buzz about him at all. I mean, he was good last year until he got hurt. So I think there's also a lot of uncertainty about what his actual ability is at this moment. But that is definitely, yeah, that's a really, honestly, until you mentioned him right now, I had forgotten he was a free agent. So yes, you are completely right. No one is talking about this guy.
It's absolutely bizarre. The other segment of pitchers I'm looking at, and I didn't realize till the words came out of my mouth. I'm about to name two famous high school teammates, which I didn't really mean to. But Lucas Giolito and Jack Flaherty are, you know, they have had talented years in the past and didn't have great years and got traded. And you just know some like pitching factory team is going to turn them into something, right? I don't know who that's going to be. Like, is it the Dodgers? Is it the Rays? I don't know. But like one of those guys is going to go off and have a great year next year in a way they didn't this year. I think those are really interesting, like mid-level guys to see. And the hard part about protecting them is like 20 teams would be interested. Why wouldn't you want Lucas Giolito on a short-term deal? Of course you would.
Yeah, I would be all in on Giolito. As far as these things go, like he's had a good track record of health since he was hurt as a prospect, and you need innings. And I feel like, yeah, there's definite downs. I'm not confident in his ability to recapture his, you know, 2020 form. 2020, 2021 were those like his two, obviously one of those being the pandemic year, but that he threw a no hitter in the pandemic year, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Lucas Giolito, famously a pitcher you and I were always extremely confident on this show, dating back to his days as a prospect, and then he extremely proved us wrong.
But I have way more faith if you were talking about him versus Flaherty. Flaherty has never been able to stay healthy. Whereas at least like Giolito, I'm like, okay, like I have some faith that, you know, maybe it's going to be a 90 ERA plus, but if he can give me five innings consistently, as you said, you got to get 1400 innings. Like they got to come from somewhere. And so these guys have more value than the guys who can actually pitch five innings consistently have more value than their ERA would suggest.
I think that's a big part of why Jordan Montgomery is going to do quite well this winter. That and the postseason run, obviously. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. We're back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast, Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. We're going to talk about three teams that I find it particularly interesting this winter because they've already made some moves or they're about to make some moves, and it's not totally clear what kind of direction they're going to go. And the first one I want to talk about here is the Seattle Mariners, right? They have traded away Eugenio Suarez to Arizona. He was their starting third baseman. They didn't exactly get a great return, but they had also previously traded for Luis Urias from Boston, and it seems like he might be their third baseman. They chose not to issue Teoscar Hernandez a qualifying offer. Pretty clear what they're trying to do here. They saved a little bit of money, yes, but also they really want to add contact. Suarez struck out 214 times. Hernandez struck out 211 times. Even for me, someone who famously does not care about strikeouts, that is so many strikeouts. And so they're going to need to replace those guys. They are also maybe the only team that not only has enough starting pitching, but possibly has excess starting pitching, right? Like Logan Gilbert could be a really interesting trade piece. And then there's also, does Ohtani end up there? And do they go sign Blake Snell? I know I just said they have enough starting pitching, but Blake Snell's from the area. He's popping up at like Seahawks games. You know, it seems pretty clear he would love to pitch there. I'm not sure. There's like five different ways they could go. But here's the most exciting outcome for me, and it's not Ohtani. Sign Blake Snell. Trade Logan Gilbert to, I don't know, Baltimore, the Dodgers, like wherever, right? That kind of thing almost never happens where you add and sell at the same time, but that would be fun. And I'm in this for fun. That's the outcome I want to see here.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I have to say, just stepping back a second, the like seeing the like out of nowhere reports of Mike Tirico on like a Thanksgiving Day football game saying that Blake Snell wants to pitch for the Mariners. I was like, what is going on here? But you know he's from Seattle proper or just the general area? Supposedly there is a hometown connection. It makes a lot of sense. Like the whole like you know this whole hey maybe they should trade Logan Gilbert for a bat, especially if they can go and replace him with a free agent pitcher when there aren't really good free agent bats available unless you're signing Ohtani. Makes some level of sense, assuming you can find that, you know, bat to trade for. And it's hard to find because like if you're trading Logan Gilbert, you don't want just a pure prospect. You want someone with a little bit of track record, right? So like, you know, think of like the Dodgers, like who's that guy? Like they're not going to trade him as good as like Michael Busch is as a prospect. I don't think they'd trade him for Michael Busch. They want someone like that they think is going to come in and be part of their lineup every day. So then you look to the Orioles. It's like, okay, who won the Orioles. And same thing, it's like, it's guys who are still probably in the minors who aren't yet established. So I'm not sure they would make that deal. I mean, maybe they would do it. The Orioles was like, hey, we'll take the last year of Anthony Santander plus one of your, like, you know, second tier prospects, which is still probably like a top 50 prospect in the game if you're the Orioles, like that kind of thing. I'm not exactly sure what it looks like, but there's something there. And you have to imagine, knowing Jerry DePoto's history, that he is exploring all of these permutations.
I think if you look at the Mariners lineup right now, there are three names I can pencil in and say, yeah, I'm counting on you for next year, right? Julio Rodriguez, obviously. Cal Raleigh is a pretty good catcher. And J.P. Crawford, who made some really nice steps forward last year, like really nice improvements. And that's like it. And no disrespect to, you know, Ty France or like Jared Kelenic, just some of those guys have a role, sure. But nobody's irreplaceable. You know, you could improve on any of those positions, I think. And this has been their issue forever. They've never had enough hitting. So if you want to add hitting, if you're a team that needs hitting, whether it's the Mariners or anybody else, you're looking at the free agent market and you're saying, okay, well, Bellinger is going to get a ton of money. And I have a lot of questions about him, given his track record, right? Matt Chapman, yeah, maybe could be a fit. But, you know, he didn't really have a great platform year, and he's going to get a ton of money. And then beyond that, it's role players or like one or two year guys. The only way you're going to get a good bat is to trade for one, I think. And they are as well positioned as anybody to trade for one. So you're right. Like, maybe they don't want a prospect. Maybe they don't want like one of the Orioles, you know, double A infielders. Maybe they want someone who could trade right now. I think there's a fit for that just because they're well positioned.
Yeah, going back, I mean, when they first traded Yoenir Suarez, which took me by surprise, my first instinct was, oh, maybe they're going to go after Matt Chapman. And then to your point, that guy strikes out a lot. I'm not sure it really helps the offense. And then, of course, they said they're going to make Luis Urias their everyday third baseman, which I don't really – I mean, it's possible that he ends up their third baseman on opening day, but I don't think that that's actually their plan. Like, I think they're definitely trying to upgrade there. Jaime Candelaria would – yeah. Makes sense there. I mean, he's not like, it's like not like, oh, like a sexy name, but it would be a real, I mean, the thing is, he's not really much of an upgrade on Suarez to begin with, but he's an upgrade on Luis Urias.
You could get like Rhys Hoskins, you know, you could get like Justin Turner. It's like, there's not guys, right? But if you're trading, I believe it's, I can't remember now, 4 years or 5 years of Logan Gilbert, you can get someone better than a guy. Right, you could get someone young who's going to be there for a number of years in the middle infield or corner infield or corner outfield or wherever. That is, they're just in such a unique spot, I think. No other team could say it like that. The next team I wanted to talk about would be the Toronto Blue Jays. So they need to replace a couple of bats. Kevin Kiermaier is a free agent. Chapman's a free agent. Brandon Belt is a free agent. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. didn't have a great year, but, you know, they're going to ride with him, obviously. I don't buy the Bo Bichette trade rumors at all because they don't really make any sense to me. And they've got a very good starting rotation and a pretty good bullpen. So they're missing a couple of bats. I think they're a dark horse on Ohtani. I think they're a dark horse on trading for Juan Soto, who would fit in there like amazingly. If you are a team like the Blue Jays, you're in a, let's say, an advantageous position in one way. A story that has come up a lot this winter is the decline of the RSN model, where a lot of teams are losing the money they thought they were going to get from the RSNs. The Blue Jays don't have that issue. They are owned by the same company that owns their television network. They are Toronto's team. They do very well financially. They can afford to do these things. And I think if you're looking at this young core they spent so much effort building, you know, Bichette and Guerrero and all this, now is the time to strike. You know, it's not, oh, next year. It's like, it's right now. And I feel like Ohtani is a real possibility there. He's not my number one team, but I would not be shocked if that's where he ends up.
The Ohtani Blue Jays like connection is maybe my favorite of the offseason. Yes. I think that would be, as like a fan of baseball, I think that is the one I find most interesting, because it's a little unexpected, but I think he'd rake in that ballpark and he would look really good in that uniform. And it's just like, it'd be cool. It'd be different. You know, it just, there's something about it that you're just like, oh, Dodgers, boring, you know, like Cubs, like, more, you know, it's like, oh, Blue Jays, like that's different. I like a little, you know, variety of this is the spice of life. And I would like to see, if of these teams that are kind of rumored, I think the one that would make me most excited as a neutral observer would be the Blue Jays.
Give me a top four of a lineup that has Springer, Bichette, Vlad, and Ohtani, or Soto. Like, if they don't get Ohtani, like, they could trade for Soto. That makes a ton of sense as well.
Yes. I mean, I don't really understand. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what's going on with Soto, right? Because I think that there's obviously uncertainty around the Padres to begin with their owner passing away and a new like leadership group taking over. And you don't know exactly if they're going to view it the same way that Peter Seidler did. Right. Cause, and then there's just the fact that like every team should be wanting to trade for Juan Soto. Like, I don't really, there's now suddenly this almost feels like a, I don't want to say foregone conclusion, but there's all this hype of like, oh, well, Yankees are going to trade for Soto. And it's like, why should anyone let the Yankees trade for Soto? Right. Like, this guy is a generational player and would instantly be the best hitter on like 26 of 30 teams, maybe 28 of 30 teams, depending on your taste. So I feel like given the dearth of quality bats on the free agent market, there should be a bidding war. Maybe this is why, you know, on a recent podcast you mentioned like, well, part of the reason I don't think they'll trade him is because look what the Red Sox got for Mookie Betts and what what Cleveland got for Francisco Lindor, your free agency, like kind of underwhelming. Maybe they should just hold on to him. But I think they could spice up a bidding war. And maybe that's honestly where some of these leaks are coming from, is like they're someone's trying to get the feeling like, hey, he's close to the Yankees, get your act together and start making some offers for this guy. And maybe the Blue Jays are one of those teams.
Yeah, at the risk of letting Yankee Twitter inform what every Yankee fan is thinking, I'm kind of shocked by how many Yankee fans do not want to trade for a guy who's got 1 year left before free agency. As though, A, that wouldn't be an incredibly valuable year. You'd have Juan Soto on your team for a year. That's a really good thing.
At age 25?
At age 25. And B, I know that Scott Boras clients generally go to free agency and don't sign extensions. It doesn't matter that he said that's likely to happen. Those words are irrelevant, right? You get him on your team for a year. You start offering him contracts when nobody else is allowed to. Sometimes extensions happen. Of course, it's not likely. Is it possible? Sure. Is it worth the risk? Yes. And to what you just said, not that he would come cheaply in trade, because he wouldn't, because he's Juan Soto. You just don't get the prospect package for 1 year of control that you might think you did. You know, like I went back and I looked when I wrote about this the other day, hitters only, to try to find comparables over the last like 30 years. And I only found three. Lindor, as you said, Betts, as you said, and Jason Hayward getting traded to the Cardinals for a decent package. None of these were like packages that we rued and wish we had never done. You were happy to have the guy for a year. And I think that the Yankees and their fans would regret it if they had the opportunity to do this and didn't actually do it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, look at the Yankees' top prospects, right? They're not going to, first of all, it's the Padres. They wouldn't trade Volpe. He's now part of their team. Also, the Padres do not need a shortstop, right? They're not like that. So it's like, it's not really a great match there.
They always need a shortstop, Matt. They always need
a shortstop. But you know what I mean? Like, but the point is, it's not going to be Volpe, right? And it's probably not going to be Jason Dominguez because he's hurt. And like, I'm not sure he'd be the center. Maybe he'd be involved. I don't know. So like, you're telling me you wouldn't trade Spencer Jones, who's like right now, like, I think pipe. I mean, granted, they haven't done their preseason re-rank yet. I don't know where he'll end up. But when the season ended, he was in the 70s in MLB Pipeline's rankings. Like, that's going to be why you don't get Juan Soto. Like, I don't buy that. Granted, it would take more than just Spencer Jones, but he would presumably be the centerpiece in any of these deals. And or like Drew that's Thorpe. That's not going to be why you don't get the guy, right? No. So I do think generally we've seen, I think GMs have actually become less averse to trading prospects than they were maybe 10 years ago, or maybe 5 years ago, but I'm not sure fans have fully caught up. And I get it. Like fans, like it is more fun to root for your guys that came up through your system. And I understand like some of it is emotional. It's not just, I think people assume it's just, oh, this fan is calculating and thinks like, oh, war per dollar and all that. Like for some fans, that's part of it. But other part of it is just like, it's fun to root for the guys. If you've been following a guy through your system, it's always more satisfying when they debut with you and become a star with you. And so there's always like that part of it that's baked into it. All that said, I don't, you know, if I'm a Yankee fan, I make that trade every day of the week. And if I'm a fan of any other team that we're talking about, the Blue Jays, who else on your list? The Blue Jays, the Mets, who else did you have of the fits for Soto?
For Soto, I mean, yes, as you said, like every team should be interested in considering him. The Giants, the Cubs, like those are obvious fits.
These, I mean, guys like this don't come around very often, you know, and you do it. So I think that I'm very interested to see if he actually gets traded and what the package ends up being. I think it's going to, if he gets traded, it will be a more impressive package than what the Red Sox got for Mookie Betts.
Well, people forget also that part of that was the Red Sox being allowed to move David Price's contract, right? Like that is part of the value there. I don't think we're actually talking about the Blue Jays anymore. Our third team I wanted to talk about, because there's actually news about it today, is the Milwaukee Brewers. I think everybody has looked at this winter as a winter of upheaval in Wisconsin because Brandon Woodruff got hurt and non-tendered. Craig Counsell is gone to the Cubs. Obviously, you know, this has kind of been a stable franchise for a while, and that's no longer true. And so everyone has sort of assumed, well, I guess they're going to trade Corbin Burns, maybe Willie Adames, and just reset the whole thing. That might still happen. But there was some interesting news this morning. It has been reported that Jackson Churio, who is not a name I think most people know yet, he is not even 20 years old yet. He's 19. He's their top prospect. He is reportedly going to sign an 8-year contract extension with 2 club options. That would make him the 6th player in history to sign a long-term deal without having reached the major leagues yet. 2 of those have worked out okay. The Luis Robert one has worked out fantastically. The Eloy Jimenez one has worked out fine. People don't talk too much about the Scott Kingery, John Singleton, and Evan White deals. But anyway, this says 2 things, right? Number one, it says how much they believe that Jackson Churio is going to be a star. He reached AA last year. And number 2, because now you've got a little more contract certainty, this might make it more likely he's in the opening day outfield. And if that's the case, then what does that change about their direction, right? If you do that and you say, well, okay, is there on opening day and Christian Yelich is there on opening day, maybe we don't trade Burns. Maybe we don't trade Adames, at least not right away. Maybe we trade from our now excess of outfielders for the infield bat we desperately need. See how it goes in kind of an unimpressive division. And if you're, you know, if you're contending in July, cool. And if you're not, you probably still get something pretty good for Corbin Burns in July, assuming he's healthy. What do you think about that?
I think they're going to go the opposite direction. I think they're going to kind of treat this year as a little bit of a reset and try and capitalize on Adames and Burns right now, get as much as they can and be like, hey, we're going to kind of like reset around the core. Churio's going to lead the way. We have Sal Frelick, who's a nice prospect, nice young player, and see what else we can add around them and sort of, you know, maybe say like, okay, we're willing to maybe cede a little ground to the Cubs and the Cardinals this year and maybe the Reds as well, and kind of hope that while, you know, the Cardinals right now are all in on old pitching, like, you know what, if we fall behind the Cardinals this year, that's okay, but we like where we are. We like our 5-year plan way more than their 5-year plan.
Oh, I like this because usually you and I are kind of in agreement on these things. And I think I completely disagree with you, because if you look at the trajectory of the other teams in the Central, right, the Cubs didn't go get counsel to not contend for years to come. The Pirates and the Reds, I think, are on, let's say, an upward trajectory. I don't know how far they'll get. I'm not saying they're the next Orioles or whatever, but they haven't been competitive in kind of a while, and they both seem like they are reaching that stage where it's like, okay, our prospects are here, we're going to get better. I would argue that the strength of the Central in, let's say, 2025 through 27 will be better than it is in 2024, which means this is the time for the Brewers to strike, at least, or at least try to. And if it hasn't worked halfway through the season, you can still trade Devin Williams, like whatever. So I think I take the opposite view of you on that.
All right, I guess we'll have to agree to disagree for once.
Ah, that's so unlike us. Okay, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back on the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. Back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast, Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. We're going to take a quick break from hot stove talk to talk about a Hall of Fame voting ceremony that's going to be happening soon on December 3rd. The contemporary ballot will be voted upon. This is for those who made their greatest impact from 1980 to the present. And it's not just players. It's actually not about players at all. It's about managers. It's about umpires. It's about executives. So there are 8 candidates on this ballot, 4 managers, 2 umps, 2 executives. There are 16 members of the voting committee, and you have to have 75% to get in. So you need to get 9 of the 16 votes to be inducted. The little wrinkle here, voters are limited to selecting at most 3 candidates for their ballots. And that means there's only 48 total ballots that can be cast. You do the math. There's only so many of these guys are going to get in. Now, Matt, I would like to pretend I have a great deal of opinions on umpires Ed Montague and Joe West. I don't. We will bypass the executives, Bill White and Hank Peters, respectfully. I think what we're most interested in, because these are guys you and I both grew up watching, right, are the 4 managers, Jim Leland, Lou Piniella, Davey Johnson, and Cito Gaston. Let's start with this. How do you even evaluate this? We've never been able to evaluate managers well. How do you pick and say, yes, this guy is deserving and this guy is not?
And this, I don't really know how you do it, frankly, but this is where I think it actually in looking at these four guys, it sort of, you know, crystallizes for me. Because I think that, like, Leland, Pinella, and Davey Johnson are very similar in a lot of ways, right? They managed for a long time. They managed a lot of teams. They had success with various teams. They all won exactly one World Series.
They all won one World Series, yes.
They all won. So it's like they are very similar candidacies, right? I think that in the space of baseball history, Davey Johnson has a couple things in his favor. In that, you know, he was an early user of sabermetrics and computers. He was on deck when I'm mixing up my people. But he did hit 43 homers in a season, and he was a star in Japan. But nothing. I mean, but then you could say Jim Leland managed Team USA in the World Baseball. It's like they're very similar. But then you have Cedar Gaston, and like has a very clear like first line of his Hall of Fame plaque, which is the first Black manager to win a World Series, and then he did it twice in a row, and that feels like we're talking about a history, a museum of baseball history. I know the plaque room is supposed to be different than the rest of the museum part, but like it is like a historical record. And like that's a very, as far as first lines of Hall of Fame plaques go, like that's a pretty strong one, especially when you consider the history of baseball with Jackie Robinson and integration and the place, you know, like it, to me, he's an obvious, for that reason alone, is kind of like a no brainer. Like I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. Like that's pretty significant. So, it's hard for me to parse those other three guys, even though they were a big part of my childhood of growing up watching baseball, Leland, Pinella, and Davey Johnson, personalities, a big part of the game. But for me, Gaston stands out for reasons I mentioned.
Yeah. If we're talking personalities, you know, seared into my memory is Lou Pinella losing his mind and throwing bases, right? Seared into my memory is Jim Leland smoking heaters in the dugout, which is just not a thing you see anymore. Here's my frustration with this. I think your argument about Cito Gaston is a compelling one, right? Just in terms of what he's meant to the game. The issue is because of the ballot limit in that you can only put three names on your ballot, you don't get to give any of these guys the respect of like a yes or no vote, right? So it's like, could I say of these four managers, let's say I'm picking two of them to get in, his resume is lighter than the other two. Now, a lot of that's not his fault for exactly the social reasons that you mentioned, but it's like, I think I'd be more inclined to select his name if it wasn't him or somebody else, if it was just Gaston, yes, no, right? And that frustrates me when we come to the player ballot too, in years where I've thought I've wanted to choose 10 or more. You did mention something I wanted to point out though. This is supposed to just be about what they did in their careers as managers, right? You're not really supposed to get extra credit for if you had any playing career. So like Leland didn't, he was in the minors for a little bit. Lou Pinella had a great playing career. The Davey Johnson year, where he hit 43 home runs for the 1973 Braves, and then never once in any of his other dozen years in the majors hit even 20, is one of the wildest things ever, right? And if that had happened in, like, I don't know, Brady Anderson's time, we might have had a different opinion about it. But in 1973, him doing that, that has stuck with me forever.
And the one other point I want to make is, and this relates to that because you're talking about like their roles as in baseball, is the other four you mentioned. It's hard for me to see an ump going in. They're just umps are divisive by nature. I do think as far as a baseball life goes, Bill White also has an extremely compelling case as a great player and then a famous broadcaster and then the president of the National League and the first Black executive at that level in Major League history. So he also has a legacy as a pioneer. And he was also really involved with the Veterans Committee after he retired. But as far as baseball lives go, Bill White has a pretty amazing baseball life. And
yeah,
I think he was widely respected and widely liked and touched all parts of the game. So in some ways, I think is most likely to get in, because it's possible these managers who are all contemporaries kind of split their votes because like the people might have strong opinions on all of them. So if I look at all these eight names, I actually think Bill White is the most likely to be inducted and a very worthy inductee if he gets it.
I think Joe West is probably, I usually hate saying this for players, but can you tell the story of the game without including this person is generally a pretty weak argument. But I feel like Joe West kind of transcends that just because Joe West has popped up. He's like, oh, there's a little bit of Forrest Gump of baseball here. Like Joe West has popped up, not always positively, in a very great many baseball stories over the years. The vote will be on Sunday, December 3rd, at the end of the winter meetings. Whoever gets elected, if anyone, will be inducted next summer alongside Adrian Beltre, for sure, and any other players who might get inducted. I find it pretty fun because this sort of thing always pops up when I don't think about it. I never remember this is happening at this time of the year, and it's like, oh cool, we get to think about the Hall of Fame again. Outstanding, tremendous, I love it. That'll do it for this week's podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening to the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. See you next week.